we probably both have scars from our adventures and things. And then we got into youth group and we saw a lot of our friends come to youth group. And we watched as, I know the Bowker's daughter came to our youth group and fell in love with Derek and Wayne Morgan and Dave Brown. That's Joanne's son. We had quite the crew of people that used to come and be a part of our youth group. And Derek and I graduated from high school together and great friends. We did Bible studies together. We got into trouble together. And it's just so encouraging to see. I remember when I was began working at Path of Life and Derek was beginning to prepare his heart to go to Teslin. We used to get up every Wednesday morning, bright and early in the morning, before the sun even came up on Wednesdays. We had a Bible study where we prayed about what God would do in our lives. And that was an awesome encouragement. And it's great. I love getting a chance to see Derek come back and hear what God is doing in his life and the adventures that he's on where he's serving the Lord. And it's my privilege to turn the pulpit over to Derek Baker.
Thanks, Scott. Scott was really kind and didn't share too many good stories. You know, I was just thinking when you were saying about getting up early to have Bible study before it was even light. If you come up where I live in the wintertime, you don't have to get up early and still have a Bible study when it's dark. 2 in the afternoon, we could do it. Yep. Yep. We like to get up at the crack of noon sometimes. Not me. Not really. There's so much to say. But I just want to start out by saying, first off, thank you so much as a church for supporting us for so long. You know, I was doing good until my dad started talking about Friday. Do you not have tissues here? I'll be fine. But I want to say thank you so much. And there's a lot of you in this room that support us individually. And I wish I could go through today and tell every one of you thank you. That would be inappropriate. I just won't have enough time. And you wouldn't. You probably don't want other people to know who you are. But I want to say thank you so much for being individual supporters and being church supporters of us. Thanks, Wayne. Hopefully that'll be enough. Okay, good. All right, so I want to get right to a Bible story. So I want you to think this morning about what it would be like to wake up in a city with walls, and on the other side of those walls is an army that wants to take you over. And so this army is so vast and it's so large that it wraps around your entire city, and it's not a small city. I don't want you to think of a little town or a little castle, but I want you to think of a very large city with walls, and completely surrounding you is this army that wants to destroy you, wants to take over your city, wants to either kill you or take you as prisoner. And so you are doing everything you can to keep the walls solid, to keep up the good fight. And you're behind these walls, but it's going on for a long, long time. And you're running out of food. You're running out of food. You're running out of things to drink. And so you're behind this wall, and you can't go outside the walls. You can't go do anything to make your situation better. And so the life is getting pretty bleak. In fact, it tells us in the scriptures that as this army is completely surrounding and besieging the city of Samaria, that people got so hungry that they would actually sell a donkey's head for 80 shekels of silver. Now, I don't know what you have in your pocket this morning, but you probably don't have shekels, so you may not know what that is. They were silver coins, and there's, you know, nobody knows exactly how much it was worth, but let's just say they were dollars. So, a donkey's head was being sold for a dollar. Now, in my town, they love moose head. Like, that's a big deal. Whenever I shoot a moose, there is somebody ready to take the head. Now, preferably, they would just rather take the horns and everything, and they saw the horns off, but I kind of want to do it a little differently. I kind of want to keep the horns, you know, but they'll take the head. They love the head. They're going to roast it. That's a big feast. They love that. And the moose intestines, they take those and they fry those up. That is, woo-hoo, that's what they want. But this is a big deal back then that a donkey, sometimes we call moose swamp donkeys, but this is an actual donkey like you're used to seeing. They're going to sell that for $80. You probably haven't, well, maybe some of you have spent that on steak. I don't know. There's restaurants around that sell it for that. But then they had this a cup of dove droppings. For $5 or $6. I have never been that hard up before that I want to eat dove droppings. Now, I was reading one commentary and they said, well, we think that's just a symbolic name for a certain kind of seed. Okay. All right. But it says dove droppings. It could have said seeds. So that's how bad the situation is. So anyways, it gets worse. Believe me, it gets a whole lot worse. The story gets worse. So that's going on. So they would sell a mule's head or a donkey's head for $80, or they would sell a cupful of dove droppings for $5 to eat. And so things were getting so bad that these two mothers were talking to each other, and they came up with this agreement that they were going to take each other's children, each other's sons, and they were going to boil them and eat them. That's how bad it was. And so they did that so the one mother agreed, okay. And so they did that and they ate the child. And so the next day came and the other mother said, well, give me your son. Let's boil your son. And she said, no, I'm not gonna. So anyways, the king is walking by and this mother cries out to the king and says, hey, help. He says, why are you asking me for help? Where do you want the help to come from? The threshing floor or the wine press? Ask God. And he says, so what do you want? And she explains. She says, well, we had this plan. We were going to eat my son yesterday, and today we're supposed to eat her son. But she won't give us her son. And the king tears his robes, and he's walking on the wall. Maybe he's looking down at the army that's against them. And he looks down and he tears his robes, and the people are looking up and they can see that he's got sackcloth underneath his garments. And they knew that the king is in utter turmoil. And so it says in the scriptures, he says, God do so to me and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today. But it says Elijah was sitting in his house with some other prophets or some other elders. And so he's sitting there and he says to the guys, he says, go close the door and hold the door shut, because that murderer's son, the king, has sent a messenger to get me. And listen, he's on his way now, and the king is coming right behind him. And sure enough, exactly that happened. The messenger came to the door, and the king is right behind him. And the king is calling for Elisha for his head. And the king says, surely this calamity is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer? The king's had enough. He knows this is God's fault. And because it's God's fault, that means it's the prophet's fault. I've experienced that in my own life. If something's happened to somebody, well, then it's got to be God's people's fault. So let's just get mad at them. So Elisha prophesies again. And he says, this time tomorrow, 6 quarts of fine flour is going to be sold for $1. And 13 quarts of barley flour is going to be sold for $1. And so the messenger of the king, who the king was leaning against, says, how could this be? Even if God opened the windows of heaven, how could this possibly be that this could take place? And Elisha says, this will take place tomorrow. You will see it, but you will not take part in it. Well, the story goes on. There's these four lepers. So lepers are outcasts. They have a skin disease. Today we can cure that. Today we can take care of it. But back then it was highly feared. And so they would always make sure if someone got caught with leprosy that they were removed from society. They were removed from community. They were forced outside of the camp. And so we have four lepers that are outside. And they said they're around. I forget if they're outside or whatever. But they realize that their situation is with the city, they're going to die. So they decide, well, we're going to die anyways. Why don't we go see the Syrians, the enemy that's outside? Why don't we go to them? Maybe they'll give us something to eat. If they don't, maybe they'll kill us. It's not going to make a difference. We're going to die inside. We're going to die outside. Doesn't matter. Let's go see if the Syrians will feed us. So these four lepers, they go outside of the city and they come to the camp, and the camp is there, and it says that the donkeys are there tied up and the horses are there tied up. But there's nobody home. There's nobody around. And so I can only imagine what that was like. They're probably just kind of like sneaking around, and they probably open the first tent and look inside. And after they probably did this a few times, they realized there's nobody around. Because the Bible tells us that God allowed the Syrians to hear a sound of horses, the sound of what sounded like chariots, a great army. And so they were terrified and they thought, oh man, the Israelites hired the Egyptians, or they hired the Hittites to come and to fight for them. And so the people, the Syrians, left everything in the camp and they took off. And so these lepers, they're going through, and there's gold and there's food and there's silver and there's everything is there. And so the scriptures tell us they start eating, they start drinking. They start looking at they grab the silver and the gold and they start hiding it. And then while they're doing that, all of a sudden, they said, this is important, they said to one another, we're not doing right. We're not doing right. This isn't good. This isn't good. He says, this is a day of good news, and we remain silent. If we wait until morning light, some punishment will come upon us. Now, therefore, come, let us go and tell the king's household. And so they took off. They went to the walls, to the gates of the city. They yelled, and they told them what happened. And the people didn't necessarily believe them, but they told the king, and the king thought, oh, this is a trap. This is a trap. The Syrians know we are starving to death. And so what they've done is they've hidden themselves away from the camp, and they're waiting for the Israelites to open the doors, the gates to the city, and to come out. And when they come into the tents, into the camp, the Syrians are going to attack them, and the Syrians are going to go into the city. So this is what the king said, right? He's like, no, it's a trap. So one of the smart guys goes, well, why don't we just send some riders out there? We got five horses left in the city. Why don't we put riders on it? They'll go out there. If they get captured and die, they're no different. We're all going to die. So just send them out there and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, they find that they find the trail that the Syrians left, and they've scattered clothes, they've scattered weapons, they've scattered all kinds of stuff down the road. And so they come back. And it says, the people went out and plundered the tents of the Syrians. So, 7 quarts of fine flour was sold for $1, and 13 quarts of barley for $1, according to the word of the Lord. Now the king had appointed that officer, on whose hand he leaned, to have charge of the gate. So the messenger that said to Elisha,
could this happen even if God opened the window? He got in charge of the gate.
Well, it didn't end up very good for him. He got run over. The people trampled on him in the gate, and he died, just as the man of God had said, who spoke when the king came down to him. It happened just like he said.
I want to draw some parallels with the gospel and this passage, because I think our situation today is so very similar to what happened,
I don't know, 2 millennia ago. I'm not sure what the time frame was, how far back, but it's a long time ago. But yet there are symbolisms that are so apparent here, and I want to draw them out because we are in a similar situation. So all the people of Samaria were in the same condition. They were starving from a famine. Everybody was in the same situation, same condition. And I'm going to say that every human being on this planet is in the same condition. We are in a spiritual famine. People are born spiritually dead. They are born enemies of God. Hopeless. They are. And so all the people were the same. They could not fix their situation. No matter what they did, there was no way for them to be able to fix their situation. They couldn't get help. They couldn't get food. They couldn't get water. They couldn't leave where they were. They were in a hopeless situation. And in fact, their efforts made things a lot worse. Think of those two mothers. What they were trying to do to be able to help themselves only made things worse. And I'm going to say that humans today are trying to find ways to be able to fix their situations, only to find that it's just making it worse. Only to find that they are getting more lost, if that's a possibility. Because they are putting their trust in methods. They're putting their trust in religion. They're trying to do things to help their situation out, and yet they are getting lost. They are getting more blind. They don't know the way. And they are putting their trust in things that are going to fall apart. I was telling the people yesterday at the shoot that one of our young men, well, Patrick, is in Hooper Bay. And Stephen Hall talked about Patrick this morning. He's in Hooper Bay, our farthest west location. He's in a small village, and they had 15 suicides in 12 months. Not this year, but in a previous year. And so I asked them, I said, what is the reason? Why are there so many suicides, especially in rural Alaska? Why are there so many suicides? And he said, it's not because they are hopeless. It is because they have put their hope in the wrong thing. They have put their hope in religion, and it's failed them. They have put their hope in parents that have failed them. They have put their hope in substances that have failed them. They have put their hope in spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends or partners that have failed them. And so, much like a spider web that looks like something, when it's touched, it falls away. That is what their support structures are. They're just spider webs. And so people's efforts to make their situation to find spiritual food often leads to more and more hopelessness. So then these lepers, they go out and they find this empty camp. Now this is an amazing thing. One, they knew that their situation couldn't get any worse. It couldn't get worse. So if they died in the camp or if they died outside the camp, it didn't matter. They were going to die. There's some people who realize that they can't do it on their own, and that no matter what, it's not going to get better. That there has to be a different answer. There has to be a different solution. And so these lepers, they go out and they go find this empty camp where everything is there.
And I've got to point out that, one, this has nothing to do with the lepers. Nothing. The lepers didn't do anything. They didn't scare away the Syrians. Who did that? God. It's okay. You're allowed to say something. God did. God did all the work. They did nothing. The Israelites did nothing. God does all the work.
We're going to get to the pinnacle here in a moment. I don't want to jump ahead. But God did all the work. And so they show up and they realize how great a situation this is. And they start consuming everything, right? They just start taking in, drinking and eating and hiding all this stuff. They hoarded it all away. But it was all free. God had given them a gift. And God has done that for the world. God has given a gift that requires no human effort whatsoever. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes on him shall not perish but have everlasting life, right? That's the gospel in one verse. God did it all. And it's free. And so these people, they're at this tent, at this camp, and it's all free. And they're taking it in and they're consuming. And I'm going to say right now, we as North Americans, I'm not going to say Americans because in Canada the situation is the same. The Canadian church is much like the American church. We are consumers of the Bible. We are consumers of the gospel. We are consuming constantly, taking everything in. But much like the Dead Sea where everything flows in, nothing flows out, it becomes dead. And that is not right. And what these lepers said is, this is not good. This is not good. That what we're doing is not right. This is a day of celebration. This is a day of good news. I was thinking of this as I was driving down on this message popped into my head when, and it's a God thing. I'm coming down from Ottawa on Sunday, last Sunday, a week ago. I'm driving down and I'm listening to satellite radio in this gorgeous car that they rented me. And I'm coming down, and this lady, I'm going to say maybe she was East Indian or from Pakistan or somewhere in that neighborhood. And I was just convicted that here I am listening to the gospel on satellite radio. I'm experiencing so much blessing. And of course, that lady could have been a Christian. I don't know. I have no idea. But I'm like, here's this person from, at some point, a different country who probably never heard the word. And here I am in full, taking full advantage of everything that America has to offer in my vehicle. And this woman may not have ever heard the gospel. There's a good chance that her family back east has never heard the gospel. That's not good. This is a day of celebration. We have the good news. We can't hide it. We can't dig a hole in the ground and tuck it away. We've got to share it. We've got to give it. You sang so many good songs this morning about this. I'm like, wow. Lord, you're just like throwing me an alley-oop here. Like you just keep one after another. We've got a story to tell. We have the good news. And so these lepers realized that they had to go tell everyone else. They realized that it was wrong to hide the info. And they knew that the good news had to be shared. And then they realized the king would be angry if they kept the news silent. Well, they were talking about this king of Israel, who was a scoundrel, as Elisha called him, the son of a murderer. Not a really good guy. But we have a good king. Not talking about Trump. Not talking about Justin Trudeau of Canada. I'm talking about our king. The King of Kings. The Lord of Lords. He's a good king.
We don't want to make him angry, right? I don't have much time.
I don't want us to try to share the gospel out of guilt. Guilt is a terrible reason to share the gospel.
I want us to share the gospel because we love the Lord. Because he first loved us. That's only half of my message, so I'm not going to do the rest of it. It's already noon. But I will read you my points. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 says, the love of Christ compels us. Why do we share the gospel? Why is the gospel the good news? One, because Christ compels us. And two, because we have a spiritual mindset. It's in there. You can look it up. But 2 Corinthians chapter 5 is amazing. Three, he made us a new creation. We're not the same people we used to be. We're not stuck in a famine. We're not spiritually dead. We're not lepers anymore. We're healed. He made us a new creation. Next, he commissioned us. He said, I have come to reconcile people to myself, and I have commissioned you to go be ambassadors of reconciliation. Right? That's something he's done. I'm flying from Anchorage to Calgary, Alberta, and I'm reading this story by David Platt. I don't know if you've ever read anything by David Platt. He's amazing when it comes to go make disciples who make disciples. And so his book that I'm reading is called Follow Me. And in that, he was talking about sharing your faith. And he says, don't wait for opportunities to share your faith. That's something that we love to say, especially as comfortable North American people. We're like, just waiting for the opportunity. Just going to wait for the right opportunity. And then I'm going to share my faith. And what he says is more of like a Pauline, apostolic style. He says, no, you go share your faith. God's going to put the words in your mouth. You just share. You just open your mouth, and God's going to give you the opportunity. And I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting there, and I'm reading my book. The lady sitting next to me. So I'm reading through there, and I'm reading that. I'm like, okay. Keep reading down through. And he says, so wherever you're at, doesn't matter if you're in like a coffee house or wherever you're at, you're traveling, just talk to the person next to you and share your faith. Let's keep on reading here. Is this chapter over yet? Man. I keep on reading down there. And he's like, you just got to speak with boldness and God's going to give you the words. And I'm like, look out the window for a little bit. Tuck it into the seat back in front of me. Look out the window a little bit more. So, I just asked her, I said, are you heading back home or are you traveling to someplace? And she says, well, I am traveling back home because my parents have died, and so now my family is having to split up all their things, and it has turned into a huge mess. And she says, my brother, who I love and we've always got along, is all of a sudden, you know, mean and not handling any of this, and he is unforgiving, and we are just, it's just terrible. It's a terrible situation. She says, I'm really worried what I'm getting myself into. So we talk lots and lots and lots. And she says, I don't know what to do with his unforgiveness. And I said, well, I'm a pastor. And I said, you know, what I talk to my people a lot about is what the story of the Bible is really about. And I said, the heart of that is God is bringing people to himself. He's reconciling people who are his enemies. He's bringing them in. And then he's given us the job to go do that to everyone else, to reconcile them. And I said, so at the heart of the gospel, of the Bible, is forgiveness. God forgives us, and God wants us to forgive others. And I said, what I tell the people of my church is, if you are waiting for somebody to first forgive you, if you're going to wait for them to take the first step, you are going to die waiting. And I want to say that to you. If there's somebody that you are waiting for them to take the first step in forgiveness, you are going to die waiting. But when you start to pray for somebody, when you take that person who is your enemy and you start to pray for them, something magical happens. It's not magic, but it seems that way. That all of a sudden your heart changes. And you take the first step. And that doesn't automatically mean that they're going to forgive. That doesn't mean that they're going to take a step back. But it does mean that you are a step closer. Because God, in his love for us, has forgiven us. And he says, I have commissioned you to go and forgive others. So that's where I want to leave you today. Is don't hide the good news. Don't keep it silent. Today is a day of celebration. Go tell the good news. Dad, could you pray?
Our Father God, you have challenged our hearts this morning with this wonderful truth. That we have been recipients of a great gift, one we did not purchase, one we cannot earn. But now that we have had it, and now that we have been rejoicing in our salvation, Father God, help us to realize the importance of sharing the good news with others. And help us to really believe, Lord, that if we will open our mouth, that you in turn will put the right words in, that we may be able to say what you want us to say and help those that you put in our path. I thank you, God, for your word, and I thank you for the truth that has been expressed this morning. I pray you will challenge our hearts, not only in this moment and in this hour, but, Father, throughout this week and throughout the weeks ahead. And we in turn might someday look back and hear you say to us, you remember when you said such and such to that person? And we say, yes, Lord. And you say to us, they're standing right behind you. They're here because you opened your mouth. God, help us to open our mouth. I pray in Jesus' name that you will make us the witnesses that you intend us to be. Hit us over the head or whatever you have to do, Lord. But help us to open our mouth and to speak your love and tell of your gift and tell of your forgiveness and tell of your provision for us. In Jesus Christ.